On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. All kinds of lines laid down this week in Washington with a veto looming after the House and Senate pass Iraq war funding with pullout dates attached. The White House says defeatism. Nancy Pelosi says no blank check for endless war. In South Carolina, the Democrats debate, trying to hold hands and wrestle at the same time. Pat Tillman's family raises a cry, and from out of the shadows comes former CIA Director George Tenet to say the Bush team never seriously debated the war with Iraq. Up next on Point, we'll look at a hot week in the news with Harold Ford Jr., Catherine Jean Lopez, Jack Beatty, and you. We have a great panel today from Columbia, South Carolina, in the state where the Democrats' presidential hopefuls debated last night. Congressman Harold Ford Jr. joins us. For 10 years, he represented Tennessee's 9th Congressional District. Last fall, in Tennessee's closest Senate race ever, he narrowly lost his bid for the U.S. Senate. He's now chair of the Democratic Leadership Council. Harold Ford Jr., thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from New York is Catherine Jean Lopez. She's editor of the National Review Online and associate editor of the National Review Magazine. She's a columnist for and frequent contributor to the site's blog, The Corner. Catherine Jean Lopez, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Also with us in the studio today, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, In Out of the Rain. Jack, good to have you here.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Ford and Ms. Lopez.
We'll go to that big debate right there in your backyard, not far from you there, Harold Ford, in a moment. But let's go first to this big confrontation set up now in Washington this week. Both houses of Congress, Democratic Party-led, saying, here's the funding, but here are the pullout dates. Harold Ford, where is this taking the Democrats and the country?
Well, probably the most important analysis is where is it taking the country. If I were in the Senate, I would have voted in favor of the resolution for one reason. We need a new direction, and we need pressure placed on the Iraqi government. There has to be a clear and unmistakable understanding that the American taxpayer, the American military family, and most important, U.S. soldiers who are on the ground, those who have served in Iraq, and those who anticipate serving again soon, that we will not stay indefinitely to mediate and referee a civil war. The reality is all of us want to win. I've recommended now for a few days that the President, Speaker Pelosi, the minority leader in the House, John Boehner, that Harry Reid, and even the minority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, retreat to Camp David with President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and their senior military and national security team. Stay out of the view of the press. Sit, meet, dialogue, understand where differences are. The President needs to understand clearly that Americans spoke in November. Democrats need to understand clearly that if we send the wrong message too quickly, we could undermine our efforts in Iraq. Both sides have some redeeming qualities, but the reality is the American people are closer to where Democrats are on this. That being said, we need an American solution to the challenge, and it's not going to be resolved by the President vetoing this. It's not going to be solved by Democrats firing back at the president. We need the sides to sit down and, frankly, do what we're urging people in Iraq to do, which is sit and work through their differences.
Do the same thing
I would hope
right
that, our Democrat and Republican leaders would do that. Now, in fairness to Harry Reid, who I think has been – his comments have been mischaracterized, as he indicated last week when he talked about this effort being lost. I think he really was referring to the specific circumstances around the surge and how – the violence continues to spiral out of control. He's not alone in saying that. Even General Petraeus, who was in Washington yesterday and spoke at the Pentagon, shared that uglier and harder days are in front of us. I think it would behoove the president to bring the Congress, the Senate leadership in, treat them as a team and not as an adversary in this effort in Iraq, and let's move forward on behalf of the American people.
We've got that opening picture, Congressman.
American military
we've
family.
Got that. A lot of dancing on both sides around that word. Lost. You say go to Camp David and work it out. It's hard to picture. Let's listen, Catherine and Jack, I want to get your view on this, but let's listen back just to have in our ears the tone of this week's exchanges around the war and war funding. On Tuesday, Vice President Cheney had lunch with Senate Republicans, as he often does. Leaving the Capitol, he stopped to talk with reporters and voice his dismay with the Democrats.
Some Democratic leaders seem to believe that blind opposition to the new strategy in Iraq is good politics. Senator Reid himself has said that the war in Iraq will bring his party more seats in the next election. It is cynical to declare that the war is lost because you believe it gives you political advantage.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, whose office is just steps from where Cheney made his remarks leaving the Capitol, came out of that office and offered this rebuke.
The president sends out his attack dog often. That's also known as Dick Cheney. And he was here again today, attacking not only me, but the Democratic caucus.
And the president himself earlier this week telling reporters the Democrats know exactly what to expect him to do with their Iraq funding bill.
I will veto it. And then I'll work with Congress to pass a clean bill that funds our troops without handcuffing our commanders, spending billions of dollars unrelated to the war, and forcing our nation to withdraw on the enemy's terms.
Catherine Jean Lopez, the White House is saying defeatism to the Democrats, but then many people are looking at Iraq and saying debacle. Where are we headed here?
I actually agree with a lot of what Congressman Ford said. I have for a long time wished that we could rewind a little bit and sort of had a moment after September 11th, everybody supposedly, you know, came together. But
right.
there were a couple of weeks of sort of, all right, we're talking about this like civilized people because we all realize the enemy, you know, wants us dead, whether we're Democrats or Republicans. It's not helping anyone for Harry Reid to be calling Dick Cheney an attack dog and for Republicans to call Democrats defeatists. And even though there may be truth in both of those comments, the one funny thing, we can all come together, Congressman Ford.
I'm in agreement with you. I'm playing with you. I'm sorry.
Well, no. But I was laughing yesterday when I picked up the Washington Post and agreed entirely almost with David Broder, which is the first and maybe last time that'll ever happen. David Broder yesterday.
But what's to talk over here, Kathy? There's either a deadline or there isn't. I mean, isn't that the point? Do you really think they can go to Camp David and find something between those two? And the Democrats, having been stung with this defeatist thing, how can they sit down after that?
That is a good question. I do wish they could have done that a week ago. If Congressman Ford has been saying it for a while, they should have listened to him a week or so ago, and we could have gotten somewhere. The thing about it for the Democrats is it strikes me as bad politics to have Harry Reid out there as adamant as he is when ultimately he is going to have to take a couple steps back. The president's going to veto the bill. They're going to have to change the bill the second time around to have, I assume, guidelines instead of an actual withdrawal date or whatever they wind up passing out. So if they had from the beginning done that, maybe this week would have been less of the catastrophe that it is.
Well, for whom is the question? Congressman Ford, we want you on that. But Jack Beatty, what about this? Bad politics on the Democrats' part, or are they playing a good hand here? Are they playing good advice on the war, Jack?
Can I just say before Jack makes these eloquent points that, in fairness to Steny Hoyer, the majority leader of the House, he recommended this some 3 weeks ago, not the Camp David idea, but the idea of the president convening with the leadership of the entire Congress and having a real conversation and a dialogue about it. So there were some recommendations. I appreciate Ms. Lopez, the very kind words about me, but the originality really comes from Steny Hoyer. He didn't recommend the Camp David component to it, but certainly recommended that the president convene his war cabinet, for lack of a better word. I don't mean that in a critical way of the president, but to convene his war advisors and to bring Congress to the table to discuss the new realities and a new management team in Congress. Jack, I didn't mean to cut you off at all.
Jack,
no,
bad politics?
I think it's good politics. I mean, the polls show by better than 2-1 people want deadlines on the troops, and nearly by that much they want the Democrats to take the lead. But, you know, the problem here is the president. Harry Reid said he's in the state of denial. It's almost as if the president doesn't care enough about reality to pay attention to it. This is the week in which he said, heck of a job, Alberto, to Alberto Gonzalez. And heck of a job to Paul Wolfowitz, two people hanging by threads in their job. And yes, problems in Iraq, but basically progress. You know, a president is hired. is hired to pay attention to what's happening in the world. And I think this president can't admit the depth of his failure in Iraq. He can't admit the depth, what has happened to us there. And I think having such a conference with the Democrats where they spoke to him about these things, that they had to get out of there, I think that would be too painful for him.
We've got a great panel with us today. Former Congressman Harold Ford, Jr. of Tennessee, now chair of the Democrat Leadership Council. He was at the Democrats' first big debate there in South Carolina last night. From New York, Catherine Jean Lopez joins us. She's editor of the National Review Online. Jack Beatty is here. You can join us. What do you make of the war funding standoff? What happens on the other side of the president's veto? Should the Democrats give him the no-strings bill he wants or hang tough? And did you see the Democrats' debate last night? What did you think? Who's got the stuff? Let's listen to just a little bit of that. Harold Ford was there. Here's Senator Barack Obama saying the country is very close to ending the war.
We are one vote away. We are one signature away, or 16 votes away from ending this war. One signature away. Now, if the president is not going to sign the bill that has been sent to him, then what we have to do is gather up 16 votes in order to override his veto. And I think that the men and women in uniform have performed valiantly in terms of overthrowing Saddam Hussein and giving the Iraqi people an opportunity to bring their country together. But what we can't do is expect that we can continue to impose a military solution on what is essentially a political problem.
There we are. Barack Obama last night. Harold Ford, we want to get your read on that debate in general. But here he says one signature. Wait, but that's a very big signature. You're saying that maybe there's something here. Divide the country, divide the oil revenues, split it up, and off we go. Do you hear any Republicans really responding to that, Congressman?
You know, well, there have been some. I think that, the Iraq study group laid out a path that calls for engaging our neighbor, or should say Iraq's neighbors. And engagement of those neighbors, I think, would eventually lead to some kind of partitioning of the country. The reason I share this is because I entered this with some ideas and a vision of this. And again, Joe Biden and Les Gelb are the forces, the intellectual forces behind this idea. But whatever emerges from the conversation with the Democrats and Republicans, what I hope is that they're able to present some kind of unified face. General Petraeus has been the most candid and honest of all, indicating that we're making he laid out some of the numbers showing that violence is down in ways, sectarian violence is down, yet the death Iraqi and U.S. soldiers' deaths are up during this surge. Mm-hmm. So the results are mixed. I appreciate his honesty. That's the kind of conversation that the president needs to foster or create and foster at Camp David with the Democrats and Republicans here in the coming days. You know, we may leave that conversation. There may be little to no progress. But I know one thing. We can't in America, out of one side of our mouths, urge a political discussion and solution to the religious strife and sectarian violence in Iraq and be unwilling as adults here in our own country to convene our leaders to try to craft a course that makes sense in Iraq, that achieves our goals of providing stability and enough seeds for the Iraqi people to develop a solution, a political solution to their challenges, and to begin to bring our troops home. If we're not adult enough like to do that here in our own country, how can we expect a country that is rife with sectarian and religious division and strife to do the same? Mm. We're better than that. That's the example that we've set for our centuries of existence, and frankly, that's what the world is awaiting from us.
There's the
clarity,
call.
Vision, and a plan that we can move forward with.
There's a call to break bread. Catherine, that would be great. If it doesn't happen, can the Republicans stand the heat? Barack Obama says one signature, the president's not likely, or 16 votes. If the Democrats come back, you know, okay, next time it's not necessarily pull-out dates, but it's benchmarks that the government has to meet. If they insist on more and more votes on this, can the Republicans in Congress stand the heat when the polls show many Americans want out of there, or might they start abandoning the president on this?
If Iraq doesn't get any better, no, Republicans can't stand the heat, and I doubt a Republican is elected in 2008. I, again, agree with Congressman Ford. I had wished that everyone would kind of give the surge a chance. Okay, we didn't. We've been talking through it. I think that General Petraeus gave everybody an opportunity yesterday because he did have such a mixed report. Now, of course, because Washington is Washington, everyone took what they liked out of it and then went to their sides and started fighting again. But if General Petraeus can give us an opportunity to say, okay, we're here right now, let's lay down some benchmarks. The American people are not happy with this war, and they shouldn't be happy with this war. And if the president started out, and frankly, Nancy Pelosi not saying, hey, President, chill out, there's new leadership in town, while he's trying to be a little humble, if the president says, look, these things are bad, and we know they're bad, and they can't stay like this, and we can't stay in this war endlessly, you know, maybe there is an opportunity for a conversation. The White House is, you know, to be conservative on NPR these days is an awkward position because one is not inclined to defend the president.
It doesn't sound so awkward, Catherine. We hear you loud and clear. What do you say?
On the fact that Al Gonzalez is still in office, and ultimately in the Iraq War, the White House's biggest problem, I have always thought, is that they didn't sell the war right. People didn't understand why we were going in there, and I think everyone on the show may disagree as to why we went to war.
Well, George Tenet says they didn't even talk about it. We'll come and look at that. Congressman Catherine Jean Lopez-Jek, I want to begin to get our listeners in here. Let's go to South Carolina, where the Democrats debated last night. John's on the line from Florence, South Carolina. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Wanted to take out a point, and it seems like what I saw last night with the Democratic debate was, you know, the thick and thin. Whoever's for the war is going to go Republican. Whoever's against the war, and that's their, like, ticket they're going to run on. That's their issue for 2008 and 2004.
All about the war. Do you think that works?
Well, no, because in a way, like, forget about why we went to Iraq. I think we went to Iraq because of 9/11, the terrorists, the world got smaller, and in order to control the terrorists and the hatred that they have towards the Western world, we have to take and give these people hope. Because people that blow up themselves don't have any hope at all.
5,000 dead in Baghdad this month. Does that look like hope to you, John?
No, but when the Democrats last night said we need to stop this war, okay, I'm with you there, but they won't go further and say, what are we going to do next? Because, okay, we don't know the solution to Iraq to get it where it is.
Yeah, what next is the tough one. Your phone line's a little tough, too, John. Forgive me. Let me get one more here from Medford, Massachusetts. Ramona, you're on the air with Harold Ford Jr., Catherine Jean Lopez, and our own Jack Beatty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I have a simple point. I think that the White House has made it clear that they're not interested in listening or negotiating with Congress. Congress is working pretty hard to put together a reasonable bill that will provide funding for the military, but also provide some oversight that's been seriously lacking in this war. And
isn't it more than some oversight? It's October begin to get out, by next March be out. That's more than oversight, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what the American people want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have any productive purpose to be there. So to the extent that people want to be out of Iraq and that this White House has made it clear it's not going to listen to that call, I think it's time for people to consider supporting Dennis Kucinich's efforts to impeach Vice President Cheney.
So you say bring on the big battle here at home, never mind Camp David, let's impeach. Ramona, thanks for your call. Harold Ford, you were there last night. There was fair unanimity, I guess, broad spectrum among the Democratic presidential candidates in their first debate there in South Carolina. Does it look to you like it's going to be a united front on the war, or did you see important distinctions between these candidates?
Well, I think they were all patriots, you know, with the exception of the former senator from Alaska and my former colleague in the Congress, Dennis Kucinich, who I disagree with the two of them on many fronts.
Are you saying they're not patriots? Is that the game we're in here?
No, all of them were patriots. I said with the exception of those two, I didn't agree with all of the time, but I think all of them are patriots and care deeply about the country, and they are motivated, and they speak from a position of wanting to make America stronger. I just happen to disagree with the two of their perspective on how to do that. I don't question their love and patriotism by any means. The other six of the candidates, I think, as you were talking about the agreement and the unanimity, you know, I think they all want this thing to come. They all want the war, and I think even both of your callers, they come from it from a little different perspective as well, want this war to end. But I want to win, and I think we all want to win, and I think we have to keep that at the forefront. And winning, to me, as someone asked, how do you define that, is providing enough stability and enough of a framework in Iraq for the people in that country to build a political and economic and democratic system and way of life that works for them. we can't impose that on them. And I think where the Democrats and Republicans and perhaps the president and the team in the Congress on the Democrat and Republican side need to sit and discuss is to understand where each is coming from, because maybe there's a fundamental disagreement on what we're trying to achieve. If indeed we're trying to achieve enough stability for the Iraqis to begin to govern and to provide some kind of policing of the borders and to ensure that the Iranians and the, that al-Qaeda does not resurface in Iraq, then we're going to have a little longer-term commitment. I happen to think that that's probably or should be our end goal, and I happen to think Democrats would be right there. Now, what
you're chair of the Democratic Leadership Council. Let me get you on the record then. Does that mean – are you for or against pullout dates in the war funding bill, Harold Ford, Jr.?
As I shared at the beginning – I would have voted in favor of the resolution that the Senate voted on yesterday.
Well, can you have it both ways, pullout dates and give it longer?
By no means. I think the pullout, the laying out of a strategy to begin the drawdown is critical to place pressure on the Iraqis to make clear to them that we have no intention of staying indefinitely while they fight and work out a civil war. If they choose to do that, they will have to do it on their own terms, because no military in the history of the world, as great as ours is, has ever successfully mediated or refereed a civil war. Nor should we ask military families or U.S. soldiers to do that.
Is next March long enough to have combat troops in there to get to the kind of solution you're proposing, Congressman?
Look, if we've reached late summer and we're making progress, sir, then I think Congress would behoove them to come back and extend. But I think at this point, what has to be made clear to the Iraqis, what has to be made clear even to our neighbors in that region, that unless there's a willingness on their part, meaning Iraq's neighbors, to engage, unless there's a willingness on the part of the Iraqi government to get serious about trying to find a political solution, meaning I think this partitioning of the country is a great starting point, allowing the Shia, Sunni, and Kurd to live in their areas, to figure out a way with the help of their neighbors to divide the oil revenue evenly and fairly, and to begin a serious conversation with all the neighbors in that region about security. That's got to be the direction that we head. And if not, I'd love to hear another option.
Not divide and conquer, but divide and go. Congressman, if I may.
Precisely. Very well said.
Jack Beatty, is this the sweet voice of reason, or, you know, is this not on the playing field?
Well, I think that as to the partition of Iraq, I mean, I don't think that's a good idea at all. Just look at the city of Baghdad, how it's mixed up Shia, Sunni. What's happening now, of course,
not as mixed up as it used to be.
No, it's an impromptu ethnic cleansing. But I'm terribly afraid that if you get into transfer of populations and that sort of thing, which you'd have to do under some kind of partition, that it would be a bloody replay, perhaps at a lower level of atrocity, of the India-Pakistan partition of 1947. These things don't work, moving peoples from one place to another. It's happening now as almost ethnic cleansing as Sunnis leave Baghdad.
Harold Ford says, if not that, what?
Well, that's for the Iraqis to decide. You know, Harry Reid made a big mistake. He said, we've lost this. We didn't lose it. Our troops won, 4 years ago when they toppled Saddam Hussein. That's the only thing they could do. We have no role there now. We are simply giving this Shiite government every incentive to hold on, not to make the accommodations. And they have continually played us. Mm. And Bush seems willing to let them play us into perpetuity. We can't be saps for these people. They are not making the changes they have to make that will allow for a peaceful summit.
I've got to say here, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Catherine Jean Lopez, come in here for a minute. Congressman, yes.
I just want to, in fairness to Mr. Beatty, I hear him. But we have to realize here, and here's where I may differ from Democrats and Republicans in some ways, and not all of them, but our national security interests is what's driving this. If we pull out, and I'm not saying Mr. Beatty suggests this, but the long-term threat we face is a fortified and a rebuilt and strengthened al-Qaeda. Now, I don't agree with the way President Bush has gone about prosecuting and fighting this war. I think he has made colossal errors. I wish that Robert Gates, our current Secretary of Defense, had been in place for President Bush now for some time. Rumsfeld should have been gone a long time ago, and maybe we'd be in a different space. But to suggest anyone, Democrat or Republican, that not pursuing a different strategy in Iraq is going to produce a different result, I think is foolish. not only foolish, it's dangerous to our own security. So I would have voted in favor of the resolution in the Senate largely because I think it would force a different conversation on the part of us. My concern is one, and I know it is all of Jack and Ms. Lopez, it's the security of the United States. And as much as I believe that, as much as I know it will be hard, Mr. Beattie, to accomplish some kind of partitioning, let me tell you something. I've been there almost a half a dozen times. It's hard now. And we're not going to make it any easier by suggesting, and you're not suggesting this, and please don't mistake my tone, but we're not going to make it any easier by ignoring the reality. These people have a very different impression and have a very different take on democracy and openness and fairness. Although they've been allowed to vote for the people of their choice in Iraq, they have voted largely along sectarian lines. And if that is the case, we cannot ignore it. We have to recognize and adjust our military goals, and adjust at the same time politically our timetable for when stability and success will be achieved in Iraq, keeping fully in mind and in the forefront America's national security.
Congressman, our time with you grows very short. If I could beg you to turn the corner, we've got you for two more minutes here. You were at the debate last night. We want to get your sense of the eight people, or the main players anyway, on that stage last night. Give us your quick analysis of what you saw there, who's on top, who's got the right insight, the right momentum. What did you see?
You know, as chair of the DLC, I can't endorse or favor candidates. But I'll say this, again, with the exception of Senator Grovel and Congressman Kucinich, both who I like and respect, the other six candidates, America would do just fine with either one of them leading this country. I thought Mrs. Clinton performed very well. I thought Senator Obama reminded us and reinforced why he's captivated this nation. I thought Joe Biden, who has been considered really a second-tier candidate, really shined last night and demonstrated a command of a lot of the national security and foreign policy issues outside of Iraq, as he cited Russia and the concern of oil prices and the rise in oil prices strengthening and emboldening Putin. I thought he had several breakout moments. Senator Edwards, as he talked about his wife and his courage, and frankly talked about the need to empower middle-class Americans. And Chris Dodd and Bill Richardson, I thought were both fine as well. So this is early. We'll have a lot more of these. But I think the country had to, those that did watch it last night, had to be pleased and had to be encouraged that Democrats are ready to lead this country.
Harold Ford, Jr., chair of the Democratic Leadership Council, longtime congressman from Tennessee, narrowly losing a bid for the Senate last fall. Harold Ford, Jr., thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Catherine Jean Lopez is with us. She's editor of the National Review Online. Our own news analyst, Jack Beattie's here. Let's listen just a little bit to Hillary Clinton last night at the debate in Orangeburg, South Carolina, measuring herself against the other Democratic presidential candidates on tackling the national health care mess.
I do have the experience of having put forth a plan, which met with many of the features that John and Barack just mentioned. And people were enthusiastic about it initially, but then after the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies got finished working on it, everybody got nervous. And so politically, we were not successful. Well, I'm ready to try again.
Senator Clinton ready to try again on health care. Moderator Brian Williams last night asked John Edwards about his and congressional support for the war.
Senator Edwards, you made a high-profile apology for your vote in favor of the Iraq War resolution. You have said, quote, "We need a leader who will be open and honest, who will tell the truth when they made a mistake." Was that not a direct shot at your opponent, Senator Clinton?
No, I think that's a question for the conscience of anybody who voted for this war. I mean, Senator Clinton and anyone else who voted for this war has to search themselves and decide whether they believe they voted the right way. If so, they can support their vote. If they believe they didn't, I think it's important to be straightforward and honest, because I think one of the things we desperately need in our next president is someone who can restore the trust bond between the American people and the president of the United States, because I think that trust has been devastated over the last 6 years.
John Edwards last night putting the poker a bit there into Senator Hillary Clinton. Catherine Jean Lopez, Jack Beattie, I want to look also at McCain and Giuliani this week, but let's look first at what's right in front of us, the Democrats last night. Catherine, what's your sense of the crowd on that stage? Democrats feeling pretty good about the array of potential contenders they're putting out there. You're with the conservative National Review. How do you see it?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama should be both very happy with their performances. I think that there was some concern going into it that, concern depending on where you're coming from, that Barack Obama couldn't stand the heat standing in that group, that he didn't have enough substance to him. And he's confident, and he sounds probably just as good as anyone up there. They should keep, I think, Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich around because it makes all the other Democrats sound so much more reasonable to Republicans like me.
It's one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Not the way everyone would look at it, I do. The one person who I think had a bad night actually was Bill Richardson, because he's the most experienced foreign policy-wise, and frankly, it might be right to say he's the most experienced. I mean, executive experience, and
as governor of New Mexico,
experience.
Also there at the head of the UN, the U.S. Delegation there, yes.
And that resume didn't show through, I thought, in his performance. So I was kind of surprised that. And Bill Richardson, frankly, can be a likable guy in that kind of setting. And I thought the beer test, you know, who would you go out with a beer afterward? I think Joe Biden won that one. Everyone liked Joe Biden.
Well, Joe Biden's likable. Whether that makes him presidential is another
thing. Yeah, no, I don't think it makes him president. Although he did sound perfectly reasonable, you know, as reasonable as anybody up there.
And when Brian Williams asked him that long question about whether or not he could control his happy tongue if he were president, a one-word answer, yes.
You have the joke of the night.
Right. Jack, what did you see on the stage last night?
Well, you know, I didn't get a chance to see it. I just saw some snippets on the air this morning. I'm sorry. But here I do want to make one point, and I was listening to some commentators talk about it on the air today. The adjective strident as applied to Hillary Clinton must be retired. It's a deeply unexamined sexist word.
Are you still hearing it out there?
I heard it
today.
That
she was strident last night?
She wasn't strident.
Was
no, no, no. They were saying she wasn't strident.
Oh, I see.
That is antediluvian. With a man, you'd say forceful. A woman makes a point and she's strident. This is an idiocy that has continually gone. And in fact, there was a woman who said this. I want to see that retired in the armory of journalistic cliches. That one needs to go.
Let that one go. Let's hear from our listeners. I want to go to Ralph in Orchard Park, New York, if I can. Ralph, are you there?
Yeah. My call, Tom.
Yes, hi, Ralph.
The big problem the country has right at the moment is we have a president whose competency is greatly in question. And if this was a parliamentary system, he'd be gone, but it's not. So the question is how do you manage him? And truthfully, I think, you know, Congress is taking a very practical approach to that with respect to the bill they just passed. And contrary to what his thoughts are, that the alternative is a bill without any strings attached, I believe, you know, this Congress needs to be micromanaging him. And that's what they're, you know, this is an approach to it. And the alternative to the bill that he says he's going to veto, you know, is potentially, you know, no bill at all. Pull the troops out now if you don't want to, you know, be micromanaged. I mean, another alternative is he could resign.
Hypothetically, any of those could happen. If anyone's going to go to the mat that way, well, we don't hear the Democratic leadership exactly saying that. But you say bring on the micromanagement, Ralph, and we got that. Stephen's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Stephen, what do you see?
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I wanted to come back to Ms. Lopez's comment earlier, essentially trying to turn Dick Cheney and Harry Reid into a wash. Mm. I don't think that that's a wash. I think that Cheney has been proven to be wrong, not even more than he's been right. He's been wrong on almost everything. So the notion that you would begin a compromise with a Cheney position on the notion that it was even anywhere close to reality just doesn't seem to make sense to me. And I'd like Jack particularly to push back maybe a little bit on that comment. I don't think you can equalize Dick Cheney and Harry Reid's viewpoint on this at all.
Stephen, we've got it. Let me give Catherine the mic first. Jack, we'll see what you've got to say. Catherine, the proof's in the pudding, and it looks real ugly. How can you equalize these two or consider them, you know, in the way you hear Stephen?
Well, what's so attractive about somebody like Harold Ford is that even despite differences that that are killer differences, he sort of sees the end game. And micromanaging the war, as the first caller said, for instance, Harry Reid has got to keep in mind, and he may hate Dick Cheney, and he may want to impeach him like Dennis Kucinich does, though I don't think he wants to impeach the vice president. But that having been said, you can think that Dick Cheney is the evil wizard and that he's wrong on everything. And that he's wrong on everything. That's a legitimate point of view people hold. But fact of the matter is, we're not going to impeach the president. We're at war. And the more people in Washington who can see that and not want to, if the attitude of Democratic leaders were we should micromanage the president until we can get him out of there, that's just no way to run a war.
But you're a sober-minded Republican, and almost everyone's looking at Iraq now as a terrible, terrible mess. General Petraeus hardly portrayed it any other way. What's supposed to happen in this? How do serious Republicans look at this when the president responds or Dick Cheney responds to hard criticism of a what people are calling a debacle with these kind of broad strokes? That's defeatism that will guarantee defeat. Well, where are we headed now?
Well, Dick Cheney is also responding to a Senate a majority leader who said the war is lost. Now, when you have troops over there and you say the war is lost, that means something. And when you put a deadline in a resolution, that means something. And I agree that the war is not going well. I agree there have been colossal mistakes. I agree we shouldn't stay there endlessly. But that having been said, we're there and leaving. And saying we're leaving on this date has consequences. Mm.
Jack, what do you say?
In Iraq and in the region.
Well, you know, to get back to Stephen's point, I'm tempted of just Dick Cheney. In fact, I've said this before, what Mary McCarthy said of Lillian Hellman, that everything he says is a lie, including the ands and the buts.
Oops.
And just this week, we saw it in evidence. He was he instanced the Iraq study group. He said, even the Iraq study group came out in favor of the surge. And he didn't then say the Iraq study group also came out in favor of withdrawal starting in March. That is so typical of this man. He is effectively the president. I think he's driven policy in this administration, partly wittingly with Bush's support, and partly, I think, just around Bush. And I don't see that he's lost his grip on that. And I'm terribly afraid of this man because I think if Bush has lost touch with reality, Cheney is all too into his own reality of almost Hobbesian paranoid fear about the world. And I'm terribly afraid with that man in power of an incident with Iran escalating out of control.
But where does it go with the election coming? We had Rudy Giuliani in Manchester, New Hampshire on Tuesday, essentially suggesting that the Democrats win in 08, we'll be back on the defense. The country will be more vulnerable to attack. Let's listen to a little bit of that here. Former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani.
But I listen a little bit to the Democratic debates, and I could be slightly wrong about this, but I think this is almost correct. If one of them gets elected, it sounds to me like we're going on defense, where we got a timetable for withdrawal of Iraq. We're going to wave the white flag there. We're going to try to cut back on the Patriot Act. We're going to cut back on electronic surveillance. We're going to cut back on interrogation. We're going to cut back, and we'll be back in our pre-September 11 mentality of being on defense.
Catherine Jean Lopez, what does that mean? Steady as it goes with all the problems we've seen out there, or else it's waving the white flag? Are those really the options here?
I'm going to say something that drives my liberal friends crazy, so I'm sure it's going to drive Jack crazy. I occasionally joke at dinner parties that we'd be a lot better off if Dick Cheney were president and not George Bush. And what I mean by that is you need a president, and so the Republicans are going to do this. And if they lose, at least they'll lose doing the right thing. You need somebody talking about the enemy and the threat that we're facing, because I think we actually do face a threat and an enemy that wants to kill us all, whether we're Democrats or Republicans or Jews or Gentiles or whatever.
Does that mean staying in Iraq till the last soldier?
No. That doesn't mean staying in Iraq till Iraq is a democracy. I think the president made a mistake, for instance, and a number of conservatives criticized him at the time during the second inaugural address when he starts talking about freedom in the world and bringing democracy and freedom in the world. But I think we all agree that freedom is a good thing, but it's not necessarily America's role to be bringing freedom around the world. And so people have a sense that we're in Iraq to bring freedom and democracy to Iraq. And maybe the president has at times. And I think that I think Cheney, and as flawed as intelligence may have been and as flawed as other things may have been, I think Cheney has always presented the war as this is an extension of the war on terror. There was a real reason we went in here. Steve Hayes wrote what you may think is a crazy book called The Connection, which really was the only good defense of why we went in there.
But now we've got George Tenet stepping up and saying the whole thing was never properly debated at all. I want to play a little tape from him. He's got a book coming out saying that the war in Iraq was never properly debated, that the slam dunk comment he made was taken out of context, that he's cringed when Cheney uses it. He talked with Scott Pelley of 60 Minutes in an interview that will air on Sunday.
And I remember picking up the phone and calling Andy Card, who is a terrific human being and somebody I've always trusted. And
the I said, president's chief of staff.
I call Andy, I say, you know, I believed that he had weapons of mass destruction. And now what's happened here is you've gone out and made me look stupid. It's the most despicable thing I've ever heard in my life. Men of honor don't do this.
Men of honor don't.
You don't do this.
This.
You don't throw people overboard. You don't do this. Give them. You don't call somebody in. You work your heart out. You show up every day. You're going to throw somebody overboard just because it's a deflection. Is that honorable? It's not honorable to me.
Former CIA head George Tenet didn't like being taking the blame for the war, but he also says it wasn't properly debated in advance, Jack.
He's right about that, but to hear honor from his lips is really passing strange. This man was a toady. He bent over backwards to accommodate Bush, partly out of his personal relationship with Bush. He just couldn't bear to tell Bush the truth. He soft-pedaled things. And in a crucial meeting historians will make much of, at the White House, I think in December 2002, they presented the evidence on weapons of mass destruction and al-Qaeda connection to Bush, and Bush looked at it, and he said, is this all you guys have? Is this all you have? And Tenet said, well, yeah, we can come back with something stronger, and don't worry, Mr. President, we'll go on. And, of course, that's how weak it was, and a CIA director who was not trying to enable the president and hold on to his job as his first priority would have said, yes, Mr. President, that is all we have, and it's not much. Instead, he toadied. He knew what Bush wanted. He gave it to him. He betrayed his trust as a director of Central Intelligence.
Catherine, a final thought in another direction. John McCain, he's made the war central for himself. You saw with his formal announcement this week. Is he still a contender, or is it over?
Oh, I think he's absolutely a contender. And obviously, but that having been said, obviously so much of how he does is going to depend on how Iraq goes. I think people do give him a little bit of respect just for standing on principle. And conservatives are not big fans of John McCain for a whole host of reasons, but they're inclined to respect him a little bit more because he has been such a staunch defender of the war. And when I say defender of the war, not we need to stay there forever, I'm saying reasonably we're over there for a reason. We've made terrible mistakes and that can't stand and we can't be there forever. But damn it, we're going to try right now. And he was for the surge before the White House was for the surge. And if frankly, a lot more people listened to John McCain and gave the surge a chance for a little bit, we may be in a better position today.
Jack, big political bets being made this week on, pullout dates, no pullout dates, veto. These are large lines in the sand.
They are, and they're historic. You know, in Vietnam, we nearly didn't get around ever to anything like this. This was about once we were out of there, they were setting deadlines and so on. This is historic, and I'm really surprised to see Reid and Pelosi standing up to it. And what they're doing is catching up with the public. The public is ahead of them. They've had it with this war.
Jack Beatty. Great to have you as always. Catherine Jean Lopez, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us today. Hope you'll come again. Catherine Jean Lopez, editor of the National Review Online. We'll go out today with the music of master cellist Mstislav Rostropovich, died of cancer in a Moscow hospital today. Here he's playing Bach's Suite No. 1 in G major for cello. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.